Welcome to the BS Show. Are you ready to shoot the... The BS Show would like to thank their sponsors. Jack Cameron, accredited mortgage professional. Jack can show you the way home. Graco Impact Sports, providing top quality combat sport equipment tested and used by all levels of athletes. Dominate your world. Reposales.ca, specializing in vehicle and equipment recovery, liquidation, and sales. Hemmings House Pictures, the global movement media makers, helping tell your brand story to the world and accelerate the momentum of your movement. Farm Box Films, capturing stories the way you want to remember them.
Greetings, fellow humans. Welcome to the BS Show. My name is Boyd Sharp. And as always, in the wings, my partner in crime, Mr. Rick Trash Canyon Doyle. How you doing tonight, Rick?
I'm doing great there, brother. How are you doing?
I'm good. Last time I saw you, you were licking some wounds and and getting a rest. How's your training going?
It's going pretty good, and I'll answer that in a sec, Boyd, but, you know, there's something I want to bring up right off the top and before we start having some fun and getting into this stuff. And I like to talk about the little situation that happened to our good friends up in New Brunswick last week.
Yes, sir.
And I think anybody listening in Canada is fully aware of this, but we had a very unfortunate situation in Atlantic Canada last week. And we had three members of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police that were killed in the line of duty, and two others were injured. And it was a very unfortunate situation. And from the BS Show, we just like to put condolences out to the families of those officers. And it was a horrible, cowardly situation. So anybody in New Brunswick, we know you went through a rough time, and we're all with you down here, man.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Rick, and it's completely by coincidence, but one of our guests tonight, Dana Dickerson, is actually a former RCMP officer who trains at Synergy in Fredericton, New Brunswick, so I'm sure he's quite close to that in the past number of days, and I am glad you brought it up. It's been certainly an odd week because it's not typically the kind of thing that we have happen a whole lot in Canada. But there's one thing I will say, the national reaction to the situation has been quite interesting, because something that I've noticed is people really are focusing on those three officers who lost their lives and the many, many officers who were able to apprehend the shooter, and they had plenty of opportunity to shoot him, by the way, and they chose not to. But they really have kept the focus on those officers who lost their lives and not giving the focus to the shooter, because that was the number one thing that he wanted. And I applaud everybody in the media and on social media for actually doing that, because those guys put their lives on the line every single day, and this is just a huge and horrible reminder of that.
Yeah, it sure is, and I'm glad for the same thing, Boyd, and that's the way we've got to look at this. Think about those folks that went out and left their families to keep us safe in an unfortunate situation, and we're going to get through it, and we're going to be stronger, and I'm glad that everybody is focusing on those families. That being said, those folks have more composure than I have, because I would have blown the son of a bitch away.
A lot of people saying that, man.
Kudos to them. They did the right thing. We don't need to talk about that son of a bitch anymore, because he doesn't deserve any attention.
Agreed 100%. So let's move on to some other things.
Let's get back to
your training. Like I said, you've been really putting in your time this camp, and we just found out that the card is actually pushed by a month. How much do you know about that?
Well, all I know, and folks, we had plans tonight. We were going to bring in the folks from the Nova Scotia Fight Commission tonight, which would have just been a fantastic interview, I think. It's behind the scenes. It's the kind of thing that goes on when you put on a fight card and nobody really knows the negotiations and the talking and the medicals and all that that these guys have to deal with. So it would have been a real interesting night for that. As usual, Boyd was in charge of getting things organized, and he screwed it up once again. But as far as the pushback, from what I understand, Boyd, that the Mickey McDonald is the head of the Fight Commission in Nova Scotia, and his term was up. And basically, someone has to be reappointed or whatever by the provincial government here. And they were afraid that that was not going to happen in time to have the card.
Sure.
So ECC made a decision to push the card ahead 4 weeks to be on the safe side. That's my understanding of it.
So the next Extreme Cage Combat card is now rescheduled for July 26th. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what I've heard at this point. So,
cool.
Yeah, I mean, my training is going well, but I really don't want to talk about that too much because, really, I'd like to keep this show very objective if we can, and actually,
sure.
As we get closer to the fights, I will probably step away from the BS show and really focus on what I'm doing in the camp and let you stand back and keep an objective eye on everything, so...
Sure, yeah, you discussed that with me just a few days ago, and I respect that, Rick. I think that's an awesome thing for you to do, because you don't want to take too much opportunity on this show to promote yourself, when really what we're trying to do is promote the sport at large and all the athletes that need a voice and that need some attention. So that's good on you, man.
Well,
and I can try really hard to fill your shoes for a couple weeks, brother.
Well, yeah, I mean, they are pretty big shoes, and you know what goes along with the big shoes. Of course, there are exceptions to every rule. But, yeah, so maybe you can handle the ship and keep him on the straight and narrow. You know, Skip, I went over, Calculator and I went out for a little drive on the weekend. We went over, and it was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. We stopped in the boy's place. He walked out with these white clam diggers on. Okay, that's what he's wearing. And he's wearing those shoes that have all the toes in them, like the most ridiculous-looking things in the world. And, of course, he has a Heisenberg hat now.
Well,
oh,
I'd like to tell Boyd that that company who designed those shoes just lost a massive lawsuit. They're
yeah,
really not
great.
Yeah, so, yeah, I guess they lied to everyone about the design of the shoe and what the purpose is. So, basically, you're just a hipster is what I'm hearing.
They did lose that big lawsuit because they claimed that it had quantifiable health benefits to wearing toe shoes or barefoot shoes, as they're sometimes referred to as, and there is actually no... objective blind studies that prove that there is a benefit to wearing them. So, yeah, they had to pay out a big pile of money. But anyway,
I
like them.
Are they comfortable?
They're
yeah,
very
they
comfortable.
Ridiculous.
Well, listen, I'll tell you what. I just got back from taking my three kids to the beach. I was loading sleeping kids out of the van and into the house so they could continue their nap when Rick caught me in my toe shoes. And for running around the beach and hopping around the rocks and out in the water and up in the woods chasing the kids, those things are perfect. I love them. Leave me in my toe shoes and my Heisenberg hat alone.
Yeah. Well, you're drunk with power nowadays. That's the problem. He's got
yeah,
show.
I do whatever I want. That's right.
Yeah, he's drunk
like
with power, Skip.
Dude, he's running. I got a feeling that he's becoming like the Chris Farley character in Beverly Hills Ninja. You know, he's going to over-dramatize his training, you know, a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
No,
oh,
that
yeah.
would be
hey,
Rick.
He had Tyson Cave stop his training the other day to take a picture for him.
That is not true.
Yeah, that's how I heard the story. Hey,
that
boy,
is not
are
true.
Still in contact? Are you still in contact with our doctor friend from once in a while? Are you guys keep in touch?
You mean Sabby D?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I'll get the odd message from him on Facebook and whatnot. Why do
yeah,
you ask?
What's his blog, or how do I get a hold of him again?
He writes for fightmd.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, I'll get that down. You know what I was wondering about the other day? We were talking about concussions on the show, and I'm just wondering if there's any evidence of damage that blood chokes do. I was just kind of curious on that, if there's been any.
You know,
talk
I have thought
that.
About that. I've thought about that myself, Rick, and I have not seen anything, but that would be a very interesting thing to find out. And I guess you wouldn't find it in MMA so much as guys who have competed in an awful lot of BJJ.
Yes.
But, yeah, I can't imagine it's an awesome thing to completely cut off the blood to your carotids on a routine basis. I'm sure it's not recommended as a healthful practice, but that's a real good question. We should ask him about that one next time we have him on.
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
Well, speaking about concussions and blood issues and Savvy D, I do want to segue into fighter medicals, because that's something that I wanted to talk to the commissioners about tonight. And as you said, we're not going to have them on tonight, but we are going to reschedule with them pretty soon. Fighters, if you are planning on fighting on the Extreme Cage Combat fight card on July 26th, if you're telling people you're fighting on that card, get your goddamn medicals done. I called and spoke with the promoters today and asking for suggestions on some guys that we could have on the show. And every person that I was interested in, he said, no, he doesn't have his medicals done. He doesn't have his medicals done yet. And I'm like, what the hell are these guys doing? The one time that I fought, my medicals were done so damn early, they were almost expired by the time my fight came around. So don't lollygag and use not having your medicals done as an excuse. Get your ass down to the doctor and get your medicals done. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, from a guy who knows how long sometimes these things can take, it's not fair to anybody. It's not fair to yourself, your training partners, the promoter, your opponent. If you intend on fighting, get those medicals done and get them in, because there's a long process that has to go through before you're approved to fight. And there may be issues and additional tests that they require. So get them in there, because if you don't, you're screwing everybody up.
Yeah, that's a good point, Rick. It's not just about yourself. You have an opponent who's going through a training camp and cutting weight and all that stuff, and you owe it to that guy to have your medicals done too. And, I mean, these fighters who are probably new to the game or maybe haven't fought in the province of Nova Scotia before, if you think you have to go in and give a vial of blood and piss in a cup and you're good to go, you are wrong, very, very wrong. These guys take fighter safety very, very, very seriously, sometimes to a fault. So if you want to get medical and fight in the province of Nova Scotia, you start getting your medical work done 6 months before you want to fight.
Yeah.
And that's all I got to say about that.
So just a quick note, Boyd, two things I wanted to bring up. I've had a couple of requests from gyms that would like to be profiled on the BS show. Guys, as soon as I can get a chance, I will get to your gym and be able to talk, and love to talk about it on the BS show. It's been pretty hectic lately, but I have gotten a couple requests to drop by, and I will do them as soon as possible. And the second thing I wanted to bring up, Boyd, was a question we brought up on one of the other shows where we were talking about pro fighters, whether they could thank their sponsors at the end of their fights, the winners.
Yeah,
remember we had talked about that, and we weren't sure why this wasn't happening. Did you find anything out about that?
I did speak to Peter Martel, because originally I thought it was a commission thing. So I asked him, and he said no. It was actually something that he started doing as the promoter back in the day, because sometimes guys were getting up there and they couldn't be heard because of the sound quality in the venue, or they got up there and they said things that were not appropriate, and they just wanted to cut it out so that they didn't have guys talking at the end of their fights unless it was prearranged with the promoter. So that's something that we should definitely talk to Pete about the next time we have him on, because as you and I have said, that's just one more way that guys can promote themselves and thank their sponsors, and it's probably something that we'd like to see done in the future. So we'll definitely
have
that conversation.
And I think that's something that can be resolved with a little bit of conversation. You know, among the interested parties. I think it's very important. It's always important to thank your sponsors, because without them, you know, none of us are here. And you take guys like Jerome Wilson and Wade Graves and Mr. Cameron, like Jack Cameron, like these are the guys that are helping people, and they need to get their kudos. They don't ask for it, folks, but we got to give it to them, because they're helping a lot of
thing-
people.
It was one situation back in the day when you went out to a live venue and you saw a fight and a few hundred people would hear a guy thank his sponsors. But with the way social media and video and iPhone footage and everything is now, I mean, those videos get put up online now and thousands of people see them. So it would be great if a guy could thank his sponsors and get that extra bit of promo for them.
For sure.
Okay.
And like Jerome said that time, sponsors, they want to feel like they're a part of the team. So we need to involve them.
Yeah, and absolutely,
you know.
They are part of the team for absolutely
yes.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to bring in our first guest, and I'm super glad he's on for several reasons. Number one, he's a trainer and a mixed martial artist that I've heard about for quite a while, and he was just somebody that I thought we had to have on the show, or covering mixed martial arts in the province of New Brunswick wasn't going to be complete. But also, I just realized he's a former RCMP officer. And Rick, you and I talked a little bit about the unfortunate events in New Brunswick last month. So I'm happy to get him on and say that our thoughts are with those guys. And Dana, how are you doing tonight?
Doing amazing, Rick. Thanks a lot, and Boyd. I really appreciate you guys having me on. I'm a little shaken hearing you guys talking about the tragedy in Moncton. That's just super unfortunate.
It is, absolutely. And I noticed today when I was doing some research on you, I hadn't realized that you were a former Mountie.
Yeah, I was, actually. Yep, I served with the RCMP in both Montague, Prince Edward Island. And a shout-out to a great little town there, and I love the Islanders. And then I transferred to Ontario and worked in Mississauga in a bit of a special unit there, and was looking to get back on the street, so I actually lateraled over to Toronto Police Service and spent a couple of years there before finally giving up the goat and heading home. Yeah, so it was quite a little journey.
And well, thank you very much for... Sorry, Boyd, I just want to jump in there. Thank you very much for your service. It's truly appreciated.
Oh, you know what, Rick? I've been reflecting on that a lot over the last few days, and like I'm one of the guys who chickened out, man. I just realized that I couldn't. I had a family, and I couldn't put my life on the line anymore. So I hats off to the guys that do, and I still have tons of friends and you know, tons of close people to me that were affected by the situation. So my heart goes out big time.
Yeah,
well,
I
really don't.
I spent a lot of time in police cars. Unfortunately, it's usually in the back. So, but still, I nothing but respect.
You know, some of the nicest people have been on the other side of things lots of times. And you know, those were some of the thoughts that I had that kind of drove my decision to leave policing.
Well, perhaps we'll touch on that again a little bit later.
Yeah,
but
for
I want
sure,
to do like we do with all of our guests that we have on. I want to kind of back things up and find out a little bit about sort of where you came from in terms of your involvement in martial arts and mixed martial arts. Sort of where did you grow up and what was your first introduction to the sport and what was it that hooked you and took you on the path that got you where you are now, sort of running a gym in New Brunswick?
Yeah, that's an awesome question. That's something I love to think about and talk about. You know, I was a child of the 80s, so I grew up with Jean-Claude Van Damme and Chuck Norris, and I had posters in my room, and so the martial arts icons, and so I dabbled in a little bit of karate and finally a little bit of judo, but as a child I wasn't really much of an athlete, so it never really stuck, and that's something that I had always regretted, and I always said, oh, you know, someday I'd like to be a black belt in something. That would be real cool. But it was when I was involved in policing, you know, some years later, and I was a fully grown man that. I was working with a tactical unit, and we focused a lot on sort of police defense tactics and some innovative ways to defend yourself. And the interest caught, and I wanted to learn something outside of that sort of situational defense. So I asked around, and I was referred to a place called Toronto BJJ, which was Novo Now Jiu-Jitsu Club. And I had been around and done some kickboxing and some things like that and dabbled in some things. So, you know, I had an idea of what BJJ was, but I really didn't understand it. And, I went in there and I thought I was really tough because I was a police officer and I was a big guy and strong and some little dude in a pair of pajamas just mangled me. It was almost serious. So, you know, I actually, for about 2 weeks, I thought, I don't think I can go back. I was just so embarrassed. But I thank God for an old partner of mine, Phil, and, you know, if he happens to be listening, shout out. He really kept encouraging me to put my ego aside, and that was my first lesson in that. Certainly not my last, but that was my first lesson in that. And that's a real way of martial arts, you know?
Rick and I have said in the past that jiu-jitsu and MMA will beat the bullshit off you real quick.
Yeah, man, absolutely. There's no room for disillusion on the jiu-jitsu mats.
For
you
sure.
Know, I've always said it's so neat because you get to learn something and then test it in a live situation every practice, and that's something that you can't really simulate in a lot of other combat sports, sparring.
So how did you go from starting BJJ to eventually stepping into the cage? And if I'm not mistaken, your record is it 5-1 or 6-1 in the heavyweight division?
6-1, yeah. And, well, a mix of light, heavy, and heavy. I did fight at 205, I don't know, three or four out of the seven fights were at 205. And I came home. I wanted a career change, and Fredericton, New Brunswick is home for me. That's where I grew up. So I came back home. I left the police service, and I went back to university. And while I was there, I just was kind of running a club of jiu-jitsu renegades on the side. And when I first arrived home here, I was only a blue belt and pretty green myself. But I was lucky to surround myself with some awesome people and met up with Fabio Holanda for BTT in Montreal. And he took me under his wing and really just helped show me the way. And I spent a lot of time in Montreal training with him, and he's spent time down here. And I've been teaching and leading a jiu-jitsu team since I was a really early blue belt. So it's been quite a trip.
Yeah, an awful lot of guys from, say, anywhere from 5 years ago to 10 years ago kind of have that story where wasn't a black belt handy, so they kind of got together in people's garages, or they rented a small space and a few of them pitched in on rent, and that's the way they learned and trained from each other and from videos and from books, and then they'd go away to whether it be Montreal or, in Shane Rice's case, to California or up to Montreal,
right.
and then they just brought home skills little bit by little bit, and iron
that's
sharpens right. iron in their own little gym. They ended up with a fight team now here in 2014.
That's right, and you cross your fingers that you get a few gamers that will come in and are willing to, beat you up and let you beat them up, and it's a hard sell sometimes, especially when people don't really know what the sport's about. So I started a jiu-jitsu team, and then it evolved into, kicks and punches became more interesting to me, and as my game developed and met more people in combat sports, and I took an interest in mixed martial arts, so I thought I would give it a try, and I trained myself for my first fight. I mean, like a lot of us, I know there's a lot of the old dogs listening that are shaking their head or nodding their head right now, because you're kind of leading your own camps, but I had some success, and it was fun as hell, so I thought, I'm going to keep doing this. So
Rick,
I
got several more questions for Dana.
Awesome.
If you want to jump in for a quick
second. I feel like I'm just blabbering on.
No, you're
no,
not
no.
at all. Listen, I say this about every damn guy we have on, and I'm starting to sound like I'm full of shit, but you have a fascinating story. I mean, it just really is true.
The most interesting people I've just ever had the honor of sharing the world with have been martial artists. It's awesome. Most interesting people ever.
So when you were going through, when you were involved in the Mounties and you were talking about the technical combat that you were learning were you able to use any of those techniques when you were first starting getting into the cage? Were you able to use any of those skills, or did you find that, they weren't really relevant?
Yeah, that's the actual techniques, because I think that technique is all about purpose. What's the purpose of the technique? And the purpose is very different in a policing situation than it is in the cage. But what that experience gave me was a base, an understanding of how the body worked, and because that's a component to all these sorts of arts or disciplines. And the system I think that we kind of leaned on in tactical work was towards a Krav Maga type of, wrist locks and takedowns. So, but I started just to feel like there were deficiencies there, and that's what kind of led me to want to explore martial arts further. But in the cage, for sure, that experience benefited me big time. Also, just being used to being in stressful situations, and trust me, like I've been in a few with 7 years on the police service.
Yeah, that was the other part I was going to ask you about. Obviously, when you go through that type of training, there's a tremendous amount of mental discipline that I would assume that you would have to go through, and I'd almost have to assume that would prepare you somewhat for moving into combat sports as well.
Yeah, that's for sure. Probably my first training camp was the police training. It's rigorous for sure and super stressful. You're absolutely right. I mean, the mental game in MMA, I think, is the most important part. And honestly, to be super honest, that's where I always had a problem. Just believing that you could do it. And when you don't think you can, or you have your doubts, then a lot of times that manifests.
Yeah, for sure. So you were the first gym to operate in Fredericton, or the first one to open up. Is that correct?
Yeah, really, I was. I mean, I had some money in the bank, and I opened up a little studio over on the north side of Fredericton and called it the Fredericton Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Academy, and painted it green and yellow, like Brazilian flag colors. It was a pretty cool spot. But, you know, it's just, I had a sense of what I was doing on the mats, you know, but I didn't know what I was doing as far as running a business. So, it, you know, I learned a lot over the years of surviving and grinding out as a martial arts school owner as well.
Now, we've heard a few times in the past, you know, when people come to a town for the first time and open these gyms up, and I think there's a little more acceptance now, but we've heard stories of, you know, that there was tremendous opposition in some cases about having an MMA gym operating or, you know, what are you folks doing there? Did you run into any of that in Fredericton?
No, not so much. I mean, you know, sometimes from, like, your traditional, more traditional martial arts colleagues, you know, that karate school owners, and I don't want to single out karate because I'm not, that's not a specific example or anything, but, you know, there was a lot of skepticism, like, oh, you know, hooligan fighting type of thing, but I just kind of laid so low that, and because there's no fighting here in Fredericton, I think still half the people don't know what we're doing.
Yeah, for sure. I heard a story just last week. Peter Smith was telling me, actually, he's a former, or he's still a current pro wrestler, a friend of mine, and he said, I remember seeing Peter Martel in the gym years ago, and he was just in there lifting weights, and he said, we all knew he did something. We didn't know what it was. We thought it was karate or something, you know, but there was a lot of ignorance at that time on exactly what that sport was, so I was just kind of curious how it was received in Fredericton.
Yeah, you know, I've always sort of positioned myself as primarily a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu academy, and you know, and I train some MMA fighters, and that's helped, I think, because you know, when you see a BJJ guy in his kimono, they can relate more to it, like it's more traditional, and it's just also been really, you know, you have to put your name out there, and you have to talk about it with people, and explain to people what it is 1,000 times, and I know I've done it at least that many. So we're right. Working at that, but you know what? It's a growth phase here, big time.
Well, Dana, there's definitely a couple of directions that I want to take this, and we're getting kind of short on time because we have some other guys in the queue tonight.
Sorry, Boyd, I can talk on forever.
That's good. We'll have to have you back on again, and soon.
I'd like that.
So the first thing I want to ask about is right now there is no legal MMA in the province of New Brunswick. You guys were pretty much a hotbed for shows, both amateur and pro, there for a couple of years. There were shows that seemed significantly more frequently than here in Nova Scotia even. And then all of a sudden, boom, the city of Moncton stepped away from the MMA business. And all of a sudden, there was nobody to fill the void, and it had to be run through, what is it, the provincial government. Can you fill me in a little bit on how that situation came about and where they are right now and what's happening?
Yeah, so what was happening was the only commission that could sanction combat sports in, and specifically boxing, was, you know, the really only concern before MMA was approved a few years ago, or I guess 7 or 8 years ago now. But They only could have fights in Moncton. It was a Moncton-only commission. And the province would never approve a provincial commission. And there was a lot of mismanagement. I don't know if it was on the commission's part. There was a lot of chintzy promoting, and just the scene was a mess. It was really kind of turmoil there. So I think that's why Moncton decided to just say, look, we don't want to be involved in this if it's in this state of affairs. But there's no denying, you know, that MMA has a head of steam, so I'm kudos to the province for recognizing that and seeing the need to, you know, start to create a commission. So I guess that the act has been read through the third time, so it looks like it's going to pass. It's called the Combat Sports Act, and you know, it defines what combat sports are and sets out the regulations to provision them, similar to I guess probably what Nova Scotia uses. So I think it's the start of really great things. You know, it's going to open up MMA to the entire province, legitimately, both amateur and pro. So that I can't see how that would hurt us at all.
Yeah, absolutely. And in your opinion, your best wild-ass guess, when do you think we're going to see mixed martial arts back in the province of New Brunswick?
I'm going to take an educated guess and say October.
Really? That early?
I think that you'll see things progress quite quickly. I know that the motivation is there, and they're keen to put the people in the right places. And I'm not speaking as an authority, you know. I'm just I try and keep my ear to the ground, you know. because I have a vested interest. But they're going to form the commission quite quickly and see if they can't lay the groundwork. And we're hopeful that we may be able to have a show here before Christmas in Fredericton.
Wow. Well, that would be super. Rick and I will
be
there.
Awesome.
If it happened.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you know what? That would be amazing. We're so excited to have the opportunity for our local athletes to showcase themselves in their hometown.
Well, listen, man, that's why Rick and I are doing what we're doing.
Well, I really appreciate it. I think you guys are doing a stellar job, too, by the way.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. I just had a quick question for you. Go. The commission that's being formed, is that both pro and amateur? They'll be responsible for that, or will that be separate?
That's my understanding. That's my understanding that they will. But I can see them probably dividing that off, you know, and making sort of two separate operating bodies or controlling bodies for amateur and then pro. But I mean, hopefully the capacity to have pro-am shows is there because from a business standpoint for promoters, that's a way that they can afford to put shows on.
Yeah,
sure.
We talked about with Peter Martel and Brian Halquist out of Cage Sport. And, I mean, they both acknowledge that amateur MMA is vital to the survival of pro MMA on the regional scene because not everybody has money like the UFC that they can throw away and take a loss once in a while. That could mean the end of a regional MMA promotion.
Well, that's it. That's it, exactly. And there needs to be a development system in place. I mean, any sport that's successful in developing athletes, you know, you start them young, you systematically train them in certain skill sets, and eventually they're going to be, you know, wicked athletes and well-trained and well-balanced athletes. I think that and the coaching and the know-how in the Maritimes, it's here. We just need to pool together and really try and give it a kick in the rear.
Absolutely. And now there's one thing that you and I chatted about real briefly a few weeks ago, and it's the unfortunate circumstance where they pulled BJJ into the combat sports realm, I think, in this legislation, which means you can't hold BJJ tournaments that aren't run by the commission. Is that right?
Yeah, you know what? That is true, and that was a serious oversight. Basically, it all comes down to their definition of combat sports, and they include in the definition grappling and submission techniques. And then they have what they call prescribed sports, which are wrestling. But the problem is all those sports have provincial sport organization status, and that's something that I think BJJ will need to evolve to. But it's too bad that they've kind of taken, you know, they've taken the ability away to promote BJJ until we have those tools in place, and it could take a couple of years.
Right, so the legislation will probably proceed as it is, and then you guys will have to kind of get your stuff together and try to get BJJ pulled out of it once there's a provincial BJJ regulatory body.
Yeah, that's the worst-case scenario. And, you know, we've got one of my students is a lawyer here in town, and his boss is, you know, he knows some people in the right places. So we're trying to submit memos and requests to, you know, have an amendment to the act. So we're optimistic. I mean, hopefully it will work out. It's just too bad because I've worked so hard in Fredericton and even around the province to try and promote BJJ. I just have such a passion for the sport, and it just slows us down, you know.
Well, that's unfortunate, but good luck. And if there's anything we can do in our little part of the world down here, don't hesitate to let us know for sure.
No problem. Listen, thanks a lot for having me on. I really appreciate it, and keep up the good work.
Listen, I'm going to give you one more opportunity before you go to, number one, tell us some of the fighters that have come out of your gym that we would have heard on the local scene, both in New Brunswick and Nova Scotia, so kind of people who may have seen guys fight but don't realize that they train with you, so they can make that connection, and then put out a little call to get some new students, to get some information out about your gym.
For sure. That's awesome, boy. Thanks a lot. So, first of all, I want to give a shout-out to my good friend and a guy who is key to our team, and that's a guy named Mike Fitz. And without Fitzy, you know, Fitz came to me with some kickboxing experience and just was so keen to learn not only about my fighting abilities but my coaching abilities, and we've learned so much from each other. So without him, none of these wins would have been possible. So we got a guy just fought recently named D. Logue that the kid is a beast. He's still fighting amateur, but he's super young from Woodstock. Honestly, like long, lean, tough as nails, and loves to fight. So definitely keep an eye on him. Dylan Mercer, he fought one of the cubicle to the cage guys, Boyd, and
Robin
the
Skill,
real,
wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so, down when it was at the Coliseum at ECC.
Yeah, he nailed a dive under
man, his signature move. I mean, you know what? I'm a 270-pound black belt, and he'll catch me in that every now and then. So he's deadly with that choke for sure. And they just had a baby, but he's looking to make his return, so keep an eye out for him for sure. And, you know, Matt DeRose trains jiu-jitsu with me, and he just fought in World Series of Fights, and an awesome fight and such progress in his skill set. So I'm super proud of him, and, you know, I don't have much to do with his striking, but, man, he was looking sharp, and his hard work's paying off. You know, geez, I don't want to miss anybody. I mean, Judo John Williams. John's an awesome guy, and John was my very first student, so super, super proud of him.
John teaches at school as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, he teaches our no-gi class on Tuesday nights and helps me out with the MMA guys. Like, John came into my gym just a kid, and we've been together. I was a blue belt, he was a white belt. We really have come up together, and John's actually going to be promoted to brown belt at BTT headquarters in Montreal on Saturday, so just super excited for the guy.
That's fantastic. And I know he fought our next guest that we have coming up, Mike Malott.
Yeah.
And I think they became absolute best friends at the weigh-ins. So they'll tell you
the kind of
guy he is.
They both like that Pokemon stuff, Super Saiyans. That's what they're always talking about. But, you know,
they're
going to
kill you for calling it Pokemon.
I don't know what it is. Is that not what it is? Oh man, I'm not even joking. That's the worst, because I'm a grown man. I don't play with those stuff.
Oh, that's too funny.
No, I'm just joking.
Oh,
no,
that is awesome.
But no, for sure. And you know what? John doesn't have the best record, but he's fought anybody that he's been asked to fight. Anybody.
That's my kind of fighter.
He's always gone in there and tried to put on a show. So, you know, I'm always super proud of everything he does.
Awesome. Well, put out the information about your gym, and then we'll get you on out of here and back to your young family, and we'll get you on again here in the not-too-distant future to talk about the next great things for MMA in New Brunswick.
That's awesome. Thanks a lot. So, yeah, our gym is called Synergy Training Center. It's an awesome spot, strength and conditioning, you know, mixed martial arts and Brazilian jiu-jitsu. You'll get super quality training, and it's an amazing spot, and it just has an amazing vibe. So certainly, if anybody in the Fredericton area is interested in learning martial arts, come on out and see us, and really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Dana. You take care.
Thanks a lot, man. Looking forward to doing it again.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Professor.
All right. Thanks, Rick. Peace.
Wow, that was great.
Yeah, I tell you, another home run. He said it. Some of the most interesting people in his life are the people that he's met through martial arts, and I think that's 100% true. And like I said to him, I feel like an idiot every time I tell somebody that I'm glad you got you on the show because you have such an interesting story. But they really do. I mean, they didn't get to this level of martial arts because they're some loser. I mean, these are guys that have been there and done that, and have great lessons to teach us all. It's awesome stuff.
Yeah, and it's so great to hear a coach take pride in his students and talk about his students and how great they're advancing and that type of thing. It's not something I'm normally used to hearing. but, I mean, it's great to hear a coach go on like that and have such a close team and friendship.
If you want to get a attaboy from Peter Martel, you're going to have to earn him.
Yeah,
every damn one.
Just not for me anyway.
Yeah, that's right. Turn that foot, Rick. Well, a guy who's probably gotten an awful lot of congratulations and compliments from Peter Martel in the past little while is one Mr. Mike, the Main Attraction Malott, and we have him on the line. How you doing, Mike?
Hey guys, how are you?
Oh, good, we're good. Awesome. We just had a super super chat with Dana Dickinson out of New Brunswick. That guy has a fantastic story, man. I had no idea. I'm super excited to find out more about that gym now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it looks like a nice facility. I've seen the pictures of it. And just for the record, Dana, it's Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah, he's going to get some guff from John for that one. Pokemon, I got to love it. Anyway, I am not even going to describe your fight, even though I've seen it a couple of times now. Rick and I were there watching it by live feed. I'm going to let you kind of walk us through it. Tell us a little bit about who you were fighting, where you were fighting, and how things went for you last week.
Sure. Thanks a lot. I fought at SCC 2 in Toronto, Ontario, against Alan Wilson, who's ordinarily a 55er. I'm normally a 145er for anyone that doesn't know that already. I had planned on fighting Michael Carcula. That was who I was set to fight, and he backed out the week before the fight, and we kind of were scrambling for an opponent. Alan Wilson's opponent had to pull out as well, so we just decided to meet at a catchweight. Originally, it was supposed to be 150, and something to do with the commission. The commission decided they wanted it at 152, and, you know, we weren't going to fuss over 2 pounds. So we weighed in 152, not that hard of a weight cut. got in there, and it was a bit of a style change opponent. I was supposed to fight Carcula, who's more of a grappler, and so I'd been training a lot of takedown defense and a lot of things to deal with a grappler, and then I was switched to fighting Alan Wilson, who's known as more of a striker and a banger. So game plan changed a little bit. I decided, although I was fighting a striker, I feel very comfortable on my feet, and that's ordinarily where I'm looking to keep fights, even though I feel like I'm pretty well-rounded. I do like to stand. So I thought, you know what, I'll go out there, I'll feel it out, and wherever I feel like taking the fight, I'll take it there. We ended up, when we first came out, he threw a low kick. We kind of engaged a little bit, and I saw him load up for some big shots as he came forward aggressively. We ended up in the clinch, and I just kind of instinctively drove him to the cage. Looked for a takedown, got a takedown as he got back up. I looked to take his back. Fought for position a little bit and ended up in kind of for what most people would consider an awkward clinch position, but it was some patented Peter Martell material right there that Peter Martell had drilled into my head for 4 weeks for this fight, and maybe even a little
hand
bit before.
Handcuffed behind the head.
Oh man, it worked perfectly. It's one of those positions you don't see too often in MMA or Thai boxing. It was pressed up against the cage in an awkward half Muay Thai, half wrestling style clinch, and it allowed me to land. I landed the glancing knee to the head, and he didn't like it. He tried to posture up out of it. I kneed him in the body. Then he tried to just kind of grab a hold of me and pull me in, but I had a strong frame. When he was reaching up, I kneed him in the stomach again. I could tell he didn't like that. He kind of keeled over a little bit and put his shin up on my hip to try and shut me down so I couldn't knee him. And I just ended up throwing another knee. I wasn't even thinking knock him out with this. I was just thinking put that pressure, keep him uncomfortable. He's squirming on the cage. I know he's not liking it. He's burning a lot of energy, and I feel very comfortable here. Threw that knee, hit right on the chin, right on the button, and I felt him go limp after that. And
lights out.
He was out, and I hit him with a couple of punches until the ref jumped in and stopped it, and that was all she wrote.
Well, that is, I'm going to put that out there right now as the most detailed fight breakdown that a fighter has ever done on their own fight. we're gonna have to call Robin Black and tell him he better look out because you're going to come looking to replace him for his five-minute breakdown.
Well, to be honest, I felt I know a lot of people have talked to me in the past, and I had experienced it sometimes with early fights where they kind of black out. Like, I don't really remember what happened. What, you know, how did I get here? How did this happen? And I've said it before, I'll say it again. I did a lot of mental exercises for this fight and did a lot of sports psychology with Danny Patterson. And on top of that, I have a great team at Titans MMA and a great coach in Peter Martell. And all the positions we had been in, I had been in 1,000 times. So everything felt very clear in the fight. I felt almost as if it was just another day in the gym. There was more pressure, but I felt like I really thrived. I was really thriving under that pressure. You know, I feel like, especially with this fight, it answered a lot of unknowns for me. I definitely feel as though I'm someone who thrives under pressure rather than crumbles, you know?
That's awesome, man, because I know Rick talked with you about that both before you were on the show with us the last time and when you were on the show with us the last time, and it's really awesome to see that you have taken that to heart and you've taken something that people were kind of hinting around saying this might be a weakness in his game, and you've made it your greatest strength, And, I mean, it's a guy that's able to do that with any deficiencies in their game who's really going to be able to take things to the next level. And that's exactly what you did last week. We were chatting earlier, and I was saying, like, when guys do well regionally, everyone says, oh, yeah, he's good, but, I mean, he's only fighting on the East Coast or whatever. But you took your game to Ontario, and basically you did the exact same thing that you'd been doing all along down here. And with a fight that lasted a minute and 23 seconds, I'm happy to say that you now have officially more cage time than me. It took you four fights to do it. I figure you'll probably be UFC champion before you have enough to compete with Rick's 12 minutes. But keep doing what you're doing, and you'll be exactly where you want to go. Rick, do you want to jump in before I have a couple more questions for Mike?
Oh, I would love to. First of all, Mike, congratulations, man. That was it was awesome to watch that performance. It really was. We were really proud of you, man.
Thanks a lot, pal. I appreciate you guys tuning in and all watching together as a team. That was great.
Yeah, well, I guess I didn't have to after listening to the play-by-play. I didn't have to put up and sit beside Boyd all the time. I just had to listen to you. But, I mean, the whole – brother, you gave the total package there. Right from the moment you broke the curtain, you certainly had the poise, the confidence. You went in, you did battle, and carried yourself very, very well. We're really proud of you. And, I mean, you're off and rolling now. You turned some heads with that performance. The right people took notice, and, you know, it looks like the sky's the limit for you right now. And you still got the pretty boy looks, too. So, I mean, you're marketable. We'll see you on some milk cartons or something here before long, I'm sure. But a couple of quick questions for you. I noticed in your when you thanked your sponsors after the fight, a couple of things jumped out, and you just mentioned it again. Danny Patterson was one that you put a special thank you to. Another was Robbie McDonald. And I just want to talk about those two briefly, because you did a lot of work with Danny Patterson. And I want you to tell me about that a little bit.
Sure. There's one thing I'd like to clear up there with what Boyd said a couple of minutes ago, in that people had been whispering that my mental game might have been weak, and that's definitely not something that I consider. It's just like I consider myself. I've been an athlete my entire life, and I mean, to the average person, I'm in pretty good shape 365 days a year. I'm in pretty darn good shape, but as far as fight shape, I'm only in fight shape probably, you know, 20 days out of the year. It's the same way mentally. I think I'm a fairly confident guy, and I think I'm pretty confident in my skills and my abilities most of the year. But when it comes to fighting, you want to be on that different level. You want to be 100%. You don't want to be 90%. And working with Danny Patterson, as I mentioned, at Full Potential Health and Wellness, he is a friend of mine and really has helped me hone in on all my skills. And when I got in the cage, I had been doing my mental exercises for a few weeks. I'd been meeting with him at least once a week and chatting and everything. I still had those nerves and those butterflies, and I was anxious, but everything, the closer and closer I got to the fight throughout the day, the more positive and the more confident I felt. I was I was only really a little bit nervous kind of in the morning. I was eating lunch, and I was a little bit like, oh, man, this is the day. I'm fighting today, damn. But by the time the fight came around, when I had a great warm up in the locker room. Pat Carroll held pads for me we did a long slow warm up. I probably had a half an hour or 45 minute warm up. I felt great because I was a little stiff earlier in the day. And then Peter Martel helped me with some clinch stuff as well. And we just, you know, I felt really sharp. I felt really confident. Everything was, you know, I knew I'd put in the hard work. I knew. You know, I knew I was mentally prepared and physically prepared. I was in great shape physically, and I think definitely the work that I did with Danny Patterson helped me out and added to the work that Titans MMA has been giving me.
Well, Mike, can I jump in for one second, Rick?
Yeah,
Rick, continue, but I just want to jump in here because this is a really interesting point, because there seems to be a whole lot of confusion is maybe not the right word, but you are somebody who is humbling themselves so that you can get better. Like, a lot of guys would think, like you said, I'm a reasonable athlete. Okay, you're an elite athlete. And some guys would say, I'm confident, I have the confidence to fight. And they would say, I'm confident, I'm not afraid, that's all I need to do. But you're the kind of guy who says, no matter how good I am, I can get better. And if that means working harder on my conditioning, if that means learning something from somebody, and I've had an opportunity to learn with you, and I mean, you have the opinion whenever you're training that, hey, what was that? What did you do there? What did that guy do there? You seem like you pick up skills from everybody that you work with, and now you're applying that to the mental game as well. It's not good enough for you to just say, I'm not scared, I'm confident, I'll go fight. You're working with Danny to find out how you can maximize your potential psychologically as well as physically. I think that's what I was indicating before.
Okay, absolutely. I mean, that's kind of martial arts. That kind of is what's so beautiful about martial arts is you can always be a student. When you see guys get stagnant and plateau, it's when they become those guys that, oh, I know enough. I know what I need to do. I'll just, you know, I'll chill out in between fights, and then I'll train for 6 weeks for a fight. That's not how you get better. I just got back from I just got back right before the conversation started. I got back from Brock University. I was wrestling with a friend of mine, Chris Prickett, who's now one of the assistant coaches there. And he showed me I've obviously worked a little. I've worked my wrestling quite a bit, but he's on a new level. He's just a phenomenal wrestler who showed me some eye-opening stuff today. And you know, that's what I love about this sport. I don't want to pretend like I know everything. I want to be humbled. I want him to show me these things. I'm a better wrestler now than I was 4 hours ago, and I'm tomorrow when I go back up, I'm going to be a better wrestler than I am right now. The minute you start thinking, you know, oh, my wrestling is good enough for MMA, I'll just work on my striking, and I don't even need to wrestle because I'll just knock guys out. I've heard guys say stuff like that. I've heard somebody in the gym. Oh, I was saying something about a guy striking. He's like, oh, I'm not worried about it. I'm going to take him down and submit him. You think maybe you should work on those things that you're not great at and not just have an arrogant, false confidence like that, or just, you know, be so blind as, or, you know, be so ridiculous as to say that you don't need to work on your striking because you're just going to take guys down and submit them. That's how you become a good local fighter. That's not how you become an elite-level professional athlete. I doubt George St. Pierre ever says anything like that.
Yeah, for sure. Mike, do you mind? I'm sorry we got so rudely interrupted by Boyd's blabbermouth. I'd like to get the answers out of you instead of listen to him talk. I apologize for that.
Sure.
But back to the Danny situation, this is something that I do want to explore on further episodes because it looks like it's an increasingly bigger part of the MMA game. is his specialty and how they get professional athletes ready for combat. So that's something I do want to explore in the future. And if there were any questions about your mental toughness or your, you know, mental preparedness going into that fight, there are no more questions at this point, trust me. The second one I wanted to ask about, as you mentioned, was Robbie McDonald. And we know that Robbie does a tremendous amount for professional athletes and amateur athletes in combat sports in Nova Scotia. So you spent some time with him as well.
Oh, yeah. I didn't spend as much time this training camp as I normally would, but he's helped me out a tremendous amount. I've had, you know, it's a combat sport. It's a rough sport. I've had plenty of injuries that he's put a lot of time into, and he's always been there for me. Every injury I've ever had while being in Nova Scotia, barring the first one before I ever met him, I've gone to him to get fixed, and he does a tremendous job.
Yeah, and for anybody that doesn't know, Rob McDonald owns it's Nova Physiotherapy, if I'm correct. And he has worked on a tremendous amount of athletes in this area. He's one of those guys that we love, that are in the medical profession, professionals, and they have an interest in our sport, and they love to help the athletes out. So I was really pleased to hear you mention those two names. That's all I have to say, brother. The only other thing that I need to talk to you about at some point, we got to do something about trimming down those armpits there, because when your arms went up in victory, brother, I mean, all I could see were the mulberry bushes. So we may have to work on some cosmetic stuff here with you in the future, okay?
Maybe you could send me to your bikini waxer.
I'll gear you up. I know Goodfellow has the perfect one. I mean, I know he gets a full body wax, so I'm sure we can work something out for you.
I just wanted to...
Boy.
I want to chime in on the Robbie McDonald thing because a lot of people probably don't know, but Robbie McDonald and Nova Physiotherapy provided physiotherapy services for over a year to all the members of the Cubicle to the Cage program when we filmed that television show. And there was probably a dozen or more of us that were in there every single week, and those guys never asked for a dime for all of that physiotherapy and advice, and we can't thank him enough for that. I mean, he's another one of those guys, like we keep mentioning, that there's no sport without the guys who support us like that and the businesses who support us like that. So big shout-out to Robin McDonald and the guys at Nova Physiotherapy.
Yeah, no kidding.
So,
they've got two offices, one in Bedford and one in Burnside, if anyone listening is interested in some physiotherapy, and he's a great guy. Just ask for Robbie McDonald.
And to broaden that out even further, if you're not in Halifax but you are an aspiring young athlete, don't neglect your health. Don't wait until you have an injury and then you're having to be dragged in front of a physician. Work physiotherapy and all the other things that are available to you into your training so you avoid those injuries in the first place. Right, Mike?
Yeah, exactly.
So I think the thing that made pretty much everybody watching your fight down at the Oasis that night most excited was the final knee that dropped your opponent, except for Rick Doyle. Rick Doyle thought your speech in the cage afterwards was your most impressive feat that night, because he said the poise that you showed, the confidence that you showed, the fact that you were willing to stand on that stage and say, listen, I'm one of the best in the country. I want to fight Michael Karkula. I want to fight whatever comers you can put in front of me. He said that is the real sign that Mike Malott has arrived. So what's next for you?
Well, I'm healthy right now. I took 2 days off and was back in the gym on Monday, and I've been training ever since. The training's obviously not the same. I'm not doing hill sprints, and I'm not doing, you know, half an hour of strength conditioning every day or anything like that, but I'm working on the things that I know I need to work on. I'm going to Brock as much as I can while I'm home in Ontario to get some serious wrestling in, and I'm working on my Thai boxing and, you know, working on improving the things I'm good at and improving the things that definitely need improvement. I'd like to be on the July ECC card. I know Peter is actively seeking out an opponent for me. We'll see. I'm trying to get an opponent for that date. I think I'll be ready for that for sure. I don't have any injuries. I was pretty healthy from this training camp. I didn't take any punishment in the fight, so I'd like to get back in there fairly soon because the UFC is coming to Halifax in October, and I want my name on that card.
Well, listen, man, if there's a top 10 145er anywhere in the Northern Hemisphere and they want to come to Halifax to fight, that's something that I wouldn't mind spending $50 to go see, I'll tell you. So I really hope that works out for you, Mike.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Oh, thanks, so for joining us, and good luck with your training in Ontario. Enjoy your time with your family, and look forward to seeing you, number one, back in the gym, and number two, hopefully in the cage locally before the year's over.
Awesome, guys. Thank you very much. You mind if I give a little shout-out to some sponsors there?
You go right ahead, sir.
All right, well, first, I'd like to, again, thank Titans MMA for everything they've been doing for me. You know, that's pretty much my home when I'm out in Halifax. Thanks to the gyms here that have been helping me out while I'm training, House of Champions MMA, Parabellum MMA, and Brock University, as well as my friend's opening a new gym in Waterdown, Ontario. If you're around, it's Ouroboros BJJ, so look that up. Thanks to my sponsors, Freshman Services Moving and Storage, Nova Physiotherapy, again, and Full Potential Health and Wellness, Wilson's Titanium, and Twin City Wrestling. And then a quick thanks to Pat Carroll, Peter Martel, Chad Horton, and the rest of the guys who came out to watch my fight, Jerome and Roger, and to thanks to my teammates and Gavin Tucker and all the guys out there. I'll hope to see you soon.
Good stuff, Mike. You have a fantastic night, and like I say, we'll see you soon.
Thanks very much, guys. Thanks for having me on again. I always appreciate it.
Anytime, brother.
Great. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Bye.
Skippy,
well,
write that guy's name down, Skippy, if you haven't already done it, because he's one of the guys that's coming on very, very, very strong out of the East Coast.
Hey, I listen to what you guys say, and I'm following.
Well, listen, man, it's one of those scenarios, and I apologize to anybody listening out there if you think we're being biased in some way, because we're very conscious of that. Mike is a teammate, but we're just trying to give credit where we feel credit is due here. He put on a tremendous performance. We felt he was good. But we had to test, we had to see how he was going to make out on that big stage. And I really think he came through and he made everybody proud. And I think everybody in the MMA community here is going to be behind this guy as he shoots up through the ranks. And I wish him nothing but the best.
Well, I tell you what, I want to put out another shout-out to go along with that. And that's our man Tristan Johnson from Fit Plus got a first-round knockout in Quebec last week as well. So,
I heard that.
Seems to be good things happening to local fighters who come on the BS show. Maybe some kind of a trend we're starting here, Rick.
Well, I'd like to get some more information on Tristan's win, too, because that's huge. And this guy's on a roll, too. So we've got so many people coming out of this area that are doing very, very well, and it's a pleasure to be a part of it and to help in any way we possibly can.
Well, let's knock on wood that Jason Sago sort of takes it to the next step at UFC 174 next week, because he can be our next BS show alum winner.
Well, when is his appearance?
I believe it's Saturday night.
Okay. All right.
I'm not mistaken.
That's going to be awesome. And when we get some more information, we should get that posted as well for sure, so everybody can tune in or try to check him out.
Cool. Skippy, do we have Ken in the queue right now?
Yes, we do.
Fantastic. We originally were going to have some commissioners on from the Nova Scotia Boxing Commission, and I also wanted to have on an experienced MMA referee, because nobody gets attacked in MMA more than the judges and the referees. And I went around the local area, and I started talking to coaches and talking to promoters and talking to fighters and say, who can I get on as a referee to talk about what it takes to ref MMA, how they learn to do what they're doing, what are the challenges that they face when they're in the cage. And basically one name came to the fore, and that was Kenneth Wood. People were throwing around things like, he's the best MMA ref in Atlantic Canada. And Peter Martel, promoter at the ECC, actually said, I don't think Ken Wood's ever made a bad call in MMA. And that's extremely, extremely high praise from a coach and a promoter. Ken, how are you doing this evening?
I'm great. I'm great, Boyd.
Well, and
nice to be here.
I also want to throw in that Ken is a master of the bulldog choke. He's pulled all the skin off the inside of my mouth several times when we trained together in Sackville.
Before we get started, I just wanted to say a shout-out to Mike Malott. Congratulations, Mike, and he definitely is one of the best, or if not the best, 145er in Canada. Him and Gavin Tucker, they're two great guys, and what a gentleman he is as well, eh?
Absolutely. I mean, those guys are, they're kids. I mean, they're kids, and they're growing up in the sport, and increasingly they're growing up in the limelight, and they're handling it with a lot more poise than most people would, Ken.
Yeah, he's a fantastic guy.
Well, listen, fill us in a little bit on how you ended up as a mixed martial arts referee. I'm assuming you started off back in the boxing days. Is that right?
Yeah, my father used to watch boxing on TV when I was a kid, and I used to watch it all the time, and Muhammad Ali and Sugar Ray Leonard and, all of those fights, and I really enjoyed watching the sport, but I never actually walked into a gym until I was like 27 years old, and that was in Sydney in 1979 in Cape Breton. And I walked into the gym, and the coach in there said, while you're standing around, why don't you go hit the heavy bag? So I started punching that. I put these little gloves on they gave me, bag gloves. I started punching the heavy bag, and I thought I was pretty good at it. And the guy said, I'm done. He said, keep punching. You're doing good. Keep punching. So I was punching. I might have been punching that bag for about an hour. And then he said, come back tomorrow. So I went home, and the next day I went to work, and I couldn't even write because my hands were so shaky. Everything was shaking. I couldn't even write. And in the job I had to sign a lot of checks and things, and couldn't even sign my name. And then when I realized, my stomach was sore from doing some sit-ups. I had done, they had asked me to do some sit-ups along with them as well, and I was like so sore. And I said, wow, this stuff is really hard. So I actually trained in that gym, and then I went and trained I moved to Regina, Saskatchewan, and trained in Ken Goff's gym there as well, with a fellow named Pasquale, who turned out to be the mayor of Regina now, and he is involved with amateur boxing out there. So I've always had an affinity for the sport and boxing because, back in those days there was no MMA, and so I never really stuck with the amateur boxing as a fighter, and I decided to, I stepped away from it for a long time, and then just one day out of the blue I read an ad in the paper. They were looking for officials for the boxing authority here in Halifax. And I said, I might be interested in that. And so I met with the individual and got an interview, ended up getting hired in 1995 as an official, and I had to learn timekeeping, then judging, then refereeing. You had to advance through the in that order. And I think we trained for 2 years before we did our first fight.
Wow. And how many boxing matches would you have reffed in your boxing refereeing career?
Not as many as you would think for having done it for so long, because you only referee in the area in which you reside, because every town has its own commissions.
Right.
Except for in the Maritimes, we would travel to Newfoundland or PEI or New Brunswick, but you wouldn't go to Quebec because they have their own commission, right? So,
right.
Although I did get an opportunity to go there once, but so we would only have cards, like in boxing cards, before MMA came along. You might have to wait a year, year and a half between cards, and
right.
You might referee 3 or 4 fights on that card. So you could go 10 years and only do 30 fights.
So what was your reaction just not too many years ago when Peter Martel shows up wanting to introduce this cage fighting business to Nova Scotia?
Yeah, I was excited. I mean, not everybody was, because they were afraid. The consensus was, oh, this is going to ruin boxing, right? Nobody likes boxing. It's going to kill boxing, and MMA is going to take over, and it's dangerous, and it's going to kill people, and it was all that stuff, right? It was so dangerous. Turns out, it's less dangerous than boxing in many ways.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the reasons why you're so respected as a referee, is the fact that you have an appreciation for the sport, and you don't judge it and didn't judge it even back in the day.
Yeah, no. When I first started learning about how to judge an MMA fight, we had to go to a gym and study it. We had to put in at least 100 hours of training before we could even do our first fight.
So who did you learn it from?
We went to Peter Martel. Peter was the man in town at that time, and Peter offered his services to train the boxing authority's staff, their officials, and he offered to do it for free, which is still I don't understand, but he did. He gave his time and commitment, and we went to his gym, and we learned how to judge and referee MMA fighting, and we spent more than 100 hours, I can tell you, in that gym, and he'll confirm that, I'm sure.
You want to pop in there, Mr. Doyle?
Yeah, I would absolutely love to jump in right now. First of all, Ken, thank you very much for coming on. This is exciting stuff. It's not very often that people get to hear from the referees and their point of view, so thank you so much for taking this opportunity to talk with us a little bit. We really appreciate it. I know you have had perhaps a little different road entering the sport of MMA as a referee, because you were a boxing referee and then MMA was just in its preliminary stages, so you kind of had to get, play a little catch-up. Like you said, you had to go in and learn the actual sport before you could referee it. what is involved now if an official wants to, or if someone wants to become an official, what exactly happens?
Well, that's a good question. They have to pass an interview with a certain individual at the referee-in-chief. And if they're selected, then they go to start weekly training sessions, basically weekly. And they start in the most menial tasks. So they will start off at learning how to be a timekeeper first. And if you can't graduate from that, you don't ever get to be a judge. And then you'll start learning how to judge. And then if you are selected to judge, then you may be allowed to learn how to referee and then eventually referee. So that means that involves weekly training with people who are already trained. So you have your other officials who are ahead of you in the game, and they would help with your training. And then you would be doing this in the gyms where MMA takes place, and try and just learn from the other officials and learn from the teachers. The opportunity to learn from a guy like Peter Martel, the intensive training that we initially got, I don't think that exists now. I don't think that the new guys get the benefit of that like we did.
You also go and seek out John McCarthy at some point?
Yeah, we did a training session with big John McCarthy in Montreal. That was very interesting. He's an interesting fellow referee, and I can't say I agree 100% with everything he taught, but he has a pretty intensive judging and refereeing course that he teaches, the command program. He teaches mostly in California, but we went up for they sent us up there for some training as well, so it was pretty good. It was pretty intense.
So just to back up a little bit now, technically, who do you work for?
I don't work for the Boxing Authority. As you may know, I'm retired. I don't do it anymore as an official. So I'm an ex-official.
Okay.
But as an official, you work when you are employed as an official. You work for the Boxing Authority, and the commissioners are your employer. The referee-in-chief, Hubert Earle, is in charge of all of the officials, and Hubert Earle reports to and is accountable to the commission and the head of the commission, which is Mickey McDonald.
Oh, so I mean, we can all appreciate the fact that when a referee goes in there and he's trying to ref a match, you're in front of the crowd. You know, you're like any other official in any other pro sport. You're open to a lot of criticism, you know, after the fact. Did you make the right call? That type of thing. And it's a horrible job, I would assume, to have by times. But in a case that you have made a mistake or the official has made a mistake, what happens? Is there a discipline process? Is there, what happens in situations like that?
Well, that's a good question, Rick, a very excellent question. What happens is we do make mistakes. We are human, and we don't have the advantage of replay. So, and mistakes can happen both in judging and in refereeing. Well, for that matter, even in timekeeping. And I can tell you a story about timekeeping in Newfoundland that, boy, you'd probably get a kick out of. I'll get back to that. But just to answer your question, Rick, is what happens is, especially in judging, if we have, like, two judges say that this guy, fighter A, won the fight, but one of the judges says fighter B won the fight, then what we do is we go back and review those fight tapes. The commission always gets a tape of the fights from the promoter, and we go back, even if there isn't a bad decision, we review it. But when there's a decision that we feel is bad, even if the public doesn't feel as bad, we feel one of our guys was off, or the decision was unpopular, and sometimes we're even asked to review it, but most of the time we do it on our own, and we would review it, and we would have that official that came up with that score round by round, we would review it as a group, and he would have to justify, using the judging criteria, why he arrived at that score. He would rescore it and say, this is what I'm judging this on, this is who I have ahead right now. And quite often what would happen is when we're at the place where we're reviewing it a week later, the guy that had the score the wrong way says, wow, I don't know what I saw that day, because now when I'm doing it, I see it the other way. And I think it's just that's why you have three judges, is that there are three different angles. And when you've got two fighters up against the cage and you're way on the other side and you got two judges from different perspectives, you can't see the punches land or whether Mike Malott's knee lands on the guy's stomach or whether it lands on his thigh. And, you know, how much damage to award that shot. So, you know, you just don't see every punch or kick from every angle. So you might see, and if the fight stays over on one side of the cage for the bigger part of the fight, and you're the referee on the farthest end where all you can see is the guy's back, or maybe they're on the ground and you don't get to see much of the groundwork from where you are, then your score could be a little different than if you watch it on the TV screen, which has different camera angles.
Sure. What would happen in an instance now, for instance, let's take the official that's in the cage, the referee, and let's take a hypothetical situation like someone is down and they tapped, the referee didn't see it, all hell breaks loose. Does the official's word, is that the last word, or is there an on-site appeal process, or how does that work?
Okay, another good question. The official's, the referee's word is the rule of the law in the ring at the time of the fight. So whatever he says goes. Nobody at ringside, not even the commission, can tell him how to rule that fight, how to make decisions in that fight when that fight is on. But he may make a mistake, and that, after the fight, it can be appealed. The decision can be appealed by the coaches. Okay, so they can appeal to the authority to review, to have it reviewed and to appeal it and maybe get a no decision so that they can have a rematch. That happens very infrequently, though.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I mean, all the credit to you guys that we can possibly give. It's easy to sit back and be an armchair referee, but to actually be in there and try to capture all of the action, especially at a pace that these guys go at. And there's no way that you would have, let's say, the technical expertise that the fighters would have. In other words, they're probably doing maneuvers and moves and techniques that you're not familiar with. You couldn't possibly be familiar with it unless you have, you know, your black belt or whatever. So these things are going at a rocket pace. And for you to be able to get that and process it and make sure everything is safe, a tremendous job, and it's really, really tough. It's we appreciate what you do in there. We really do.
Well, I had a simple technique for refereeing MMA fights. I mean, to me, they were more difficult to referee than boxing. Boxing, I just had to watch everything from the waist up. So I just had to watch each fighter's punches and see every punch land. In MMA, I thought it was tenfold more difficult, more challenging, because you had to watch everything. You have to watch kicks, knees, punches, elbows, takedowns, knockdowns, everything. So it was so much more complicated. So I had to find a way to simplify it for refereeing, and it seemed to really work easy for me, and that was just narrowing it down to chokes and submissions, you know. Either someone's going to get somebody into a submission, a joint submission of some type, or a choke of some type, or they're going to knock them out in the old-fashioned boxing way, right? So uh-huh. I just had to make sure that I watched for the choke, and chokes always happen around the neck area, right, coincidentally, but sometimes with people's legs, sometimes with their arms, but it's the carotid artery, you know, that gets pressured and they get choked out. So I only had to watch for joint submissions and chokes, really two things. So I even though I had maybe a limited knowledge of how they arrived at them. I was taught by Peter how to recognize a joint submission or a choke.
One other question before I throw you back to Boyd there. And obviously, I mean, you take a tremendous amount of responsibility on your shoulders to protect the fighters that are in there, to make that call when to end this fight. And I'm kind of curious, is it your responsibility to call for the opinion of the doctor, or does the doctor come to you if he's concerned, or how does that work?
Another fantastic question, Rick. These are great questions. It works both ways, actually. The referee can call the doctor in to look at a cut or an injury anytime he wants, and the doctor also has the same power. In Nova Scotia, it might be different in other jurisdictions, but in Nova Scotia, the doctor is allowed to call time and assess the fighter even during the round. So generally it doesn't happen too often, but he does have the power to do that. So they both have the power to do that.
Great. Boyd.
Yeah, I tell you, Rick, I didn't lie when I said Ken knew his shit, did I?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is great. It's a perspective that we really don't talk about that much.
No, that's right. I mean, everybody just likes to beat up on the referees and the judges, and nobody either, A, takes the time, or B, has access to a person. And as Ken indicated, he is retired, so he can talk a little more freely than somebody who was still reporting to the commission and having to watch their P's and Q's and maybe not even be allowed to speak to the media. So we're incredibly privileged to have Ken's insight. Ken, I have another question for you. Is there anything about the rules of mixed martial arts as they stand right now that you disagree with or would like to see changed, whether that be the removal of a technique or the introduction of another technique? Is there something that when you're watching fights now as a fan, you would feel comfortable having to manage as an official?
Wow. Gosh, I never thought of that. I've always just dealt with what's in there. The only one that seems silly to me is the 12 o'clock, 6 o'clock elbow rule.
Right.
You're using elbows anyway, and elbows really are just cut people. They don't really injure people a lot. Nobody gets crushed facial bones from elbows. And the 12 o'clock, 6 o'clock elbow is no more dangerous than the 12 o'clock, 4 o'clock elbow. So it's really... to me, I think that's a ridiculous rule. I'm not happy with that one. But other than that, I think it's pretty good. You know, there are a lot of disallowed techniques in MMA that I don't know that everybody knows about. I mean, there must be like 25 disallowed techniques, like biting, hair pulling, eye gouging, trachea gouging, small joint manipulation, the 6 o'clock elbow, knees to the head of a down fighter, kicks to the head of a down fighter, strikes to the back of the head, groin strikes, strikes to the spine, holding the clothes of the opponent, pinning the opponent against the cage, holding the cage. Like, there's a lot of disallowed techniques, so, you know, we have to watch for all that stuff, too.
Yeah, for a no-holds-barred sport, that's an awful lot of holds that are barred.
Yeah, I know, and people think that there's, you can do anything in MMA, but that's not true. There's a lot of things you can't bite, you can't headbutt.
I think there's a lot of those that people, there's not a huge outcry to see, but knees to a downed opponent, especially the way people are kind of loopholing that one now with kind of leaning forward and putting one finger on the floor so they have 3 points and now they can't be kneed. I think right up there with the 12 to 6 elbow, I think that's one that I would be comfortable with going away, because guys wouldn't put themselves in that bent over position of taking a knee to the face, perhaps, if that was a rule.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a rule, and you just live with the rules the way they are. I mean, I don't think it's a bad rule. It's just that, you don't want to – you can knee a guy if he's up to the head, just like Mike Malott did in his last fight. But if that guy had one hand on the ground, you wouldn't be able to knee him because he's technically a downed fighter. That's the definition of a downed fighter. So, on the ground. So it's just you have to live within the rules, and maybe that rule should change. I don't know.
Well, let's switch it over to reffing for a minute. I'd like to keep you on here and talk all night because you have insight that I know I'm just not going to be able to get anywhere else. It's fascinating stuff. But I will throw you one more question to get your opinion on before we get you out of here, and that's do you think the 5-minute round system and the way that it's scored on a 10-point must system is something that works for MMA, because it obviously is a fine system for boxing and has proved itself, well, maybe not proved itself in some of the high-profile fights of recent days, but a lot of people give it a lot of flack for not being sufficient for judging MMA. A lot of times you see somebody who very obviously beat the guy up but lost the fight, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do have a problem with it, actually. I don't like it for MMA, and I think there's too much space between a 10-9 fight, a 10-9 round, and a 10-8 round. Like, they almost never, and you're coached by the people that train you, never to give a 10-8 round if you can't. If, you know, it's always 10-9, 10-9. It would have to be extreme circumstances to give a 10-8 round. And I think there needs to be something in the middle because there's three types of rounds. There's a round where a fighter, it was a close round, and there's rounds where one fighter clearly dominated, and then there's rounds where one fighter clearly dominated and nearly knocked the guy out. Right, and there should be three types of scoring for that, and there isn't right now. So, in fact, I came up with my own scoring system, and it wasn't received very well. Sometime I'll show it to you.
Absolutely, well, I'd love to see that. Yeah. We might even have to make that the subject of a follow up show down the road.
Yeah, because I just think that there needs to be three levels to a round, not just two. Most rounds are 10-9, and then, oh, yeah, and you're never encouraged to do a 10-10 round, like a tie round. And I agree with that part of it, is because there is enough judging criteria that you should always be able to find a winner. So there should never be a 10-10 round, in my opinion, and I agree with that. But 10-9 rounds, like, it's very subjective, and I think there needs to be a third one, not just 10-9, 10-8. There needs to be something in between as well. And so I disagree with the way that there's just too much lateral space there for that.
What about...
That's fascinating. Did somebody jump in?
Yeah, I'm just curious. So, like, the traditional pride style where they judge the fight in its entirety versus round by round, are you a fan of that style of judging?
Not at all, no. No, because then you have room for making up. So I like handing in the cards as soon as the round is done. So as a good judge, you should always know who's ahead in a fight as the fight is going on, because you're always saying, I got Rick ahead right now by a point. And then as soon as Boyd does a couple of punches or does something, now we're even. Now Boyd's done a little more, so now Boyd's ahead. And you actually assign a point value to how much he's ahead. And then Rick does something enough to offset that and even a little more. So when the bell goes, I got Rick ahead. Rick won that round. I put 10-9 Rick, and I hand him my card. Now nothing can influence me for the next round. I don't remember what I handed in. And I can't do any makeup, like, oh, I misjudged that last round, so I'm going to make it up in this round. You know, I don't like that at all, to see the whole fight. I think you should, especially in boxing where you have 12 rounds, you really want to hand in your cards before, like after each round.
Yeah,
but
I
agree with MMA too.
More of the MMA game versus the boxing, that's all.
Yeah,
yeah, not. I would prefer to render a decision based on the round after it's completed, because you know who won that round.
Yep.
Based on your own scoring criteria, you always know if the round was paused due to a timeout. I always know who's ahead of that round. If that round should end right there and we had to go to the scorecards, I would be able to score that round even halfway through it, because I've always got who's ahead. Because it's just a little scale that moves towards one fighter or towards the other based on what they've done, and what they've done is the scoring criteria. And I want to talk a little bit about the judging criteria, really quickly if I can.
Sure.
Because modern-day UFC-type rules is the everyone knows they go over the judging criteria. It's four things, right? Do you know what they are, Boyd?
Striking, grappling, octagon control, aggression.
Yep, that's it. That's the four criteria. But when we learned it from Peter Martel, when we were taught, we had to learn those four criteria and break it down into a dozen criteria. So we have cage control, aggressiveness, standing strikes, clinch control, takedowns, knockdowns, ground control, ground strikes, submission attempts, escapes from bad from submissions, escapes from bad positions and damage. Those are the criteria that we have to learn, and they fall into those four criteria. So, for example, when somebody does a takedown, well, I score for that. That's positive. Takedowns, you know, score points in my mind. But that's just under grappling. And so ground control, like when they're on the ground, who's dominating on the ground? Who's maintaining control there? That's under grappling. Ground strikes, so when he nails them with some nice ground and pound, that's grappling. Okay, submission attempts, that's grappling. So as judges, you have to understand at least a dozen criteria to score on. We don't just go by four things.
Wow.
So it is very complex.
Ken, you are blowing my mind this evening, sir.
I got lots more for you. Like when you talked about the you asked Rick about the chokes, you know, like can you be injured from a choke? And we've had doctors come and present to us on boxing, on head injuries, on concussions and chokes. And my understanding in my answer to that question, I'm not a doctor or a neurologist, but we have a neurologist, you know, we have spoken to them. And the understanding on chokes is that it takes about 10 seconds to choke someone out, and it takes about 10 to 15 seconds to recover from it. And there are no lasting effects from a choke. It's just that your carotid artery is compressed, depriving the brain of blood flow for a short period of time. It has nothing to do with your trachea or windpipe. You're not losing oxygen. You're just losing blood to the brain. So where it could become dangerous is if it was it would have to be held on after he went out for about 4 to 6 minutes with a lack of blood flow before permanent brain damage would likely to be occur. So for a 10 to 20 seconds, most referees, if they're on the ball, should be able to stop that choke within 10 seconds of it being applied. And for an otherwise healthy athlete, it wouldn't be an issue. So there's not supposed to be, and there isn't any lasting effects after a choke. They usually come to in 10 seconds, and they might forget where they are for a second and not realize the fight's over, but the slight disorientation, but after that, they're fine.
Cool.
You probably might want to hear that from a real doctor, though.
Yeah, we have a doctor, Dr. Sebi D, who writes for, he has a blog called FightMD.com. Next time we have him on, I think we'll definitely dig into that. We talked about concussions with him the last time we had him on the show, but I think we'll pick his brain a little bit about that as well. I noticed we got some questions coming in on Twitter, and one guy he asked the question, but fortunately we already covered it. It was the putting the hand down to prevent knees to the head rule. Well, Ken, I can't thank you enough, man. It was absolutely fantastic, and I think this is a great tease for bringing you back on down the road, because like you said, with that scoring system that you wanted to talk about, with all the other information that you have about both judging and refereeing, I think there's an enormous amount that we as fans and potential fighters and coaches out there could learn from your experience. So huge, huge thanks for everything that you did when you were actually in the cage, and we look forward to what you're going to be able to share with us and educate our audience on the sport from a referee and judging perspective.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot. Next time, if I'm invited back, I'd kind of like to talk about things that coaches and cornermen need to know but don't, and things fighters need to know but don't, and things the public need to know but don't. And,
done. Let's do that even before the next ECC at the end of July. Maybe we'll get you on for a segment, and we'll focus on those very things. That's a fantastic idea.
Fantastic.
Done, sir. You have a fantastic evening, Ken.
Okay.
We'll talk to you very soon.
Bye.
Cheers.
That was pretty insightful stuff, Boyd.
Wow. I had no idea, man. I'm blown away.
Yeah, I learned a lot, and there's a lot more we have to learn. You know, it's one of those things you don't really know, or I didn't know about the referees or the judges, you know, what their experience was, like what their training was involved. And you always kind of assume that those people know a lot more than you do, or you hope they do. And, you know, listening to Ken, I mean, these guys go through a tremendous amount of training. They take their job very, very seriously, and they take the health and safety of the fighters very, very serious as well. And we're really lucky here. We have great officialing, and we really appreciate all the hard work they do.
Yep. I mean, like you said, they're human. They make mistakes, and I'm sure that there's a breadth of skill and knowledge, even from one judge to another or one referee to another. And like I said, I did ask around town to find out who should I get on this show from Nova Scotia. And the only name that was really given to me, if they said, you want to know a guy who knows it, you talk to Ken. And, I mean, he just obviously proved that to us now. I mean, just absolutely fascinating, insightful stuff. And we do have to have him on to do that segment on here's what fighters really need to know. Here's what coaches and cornermen really need to know. I mean, super, super awesome stuff.
Yeah, for sure. And before you tell us, tell everybody what's coming up on the next few episodes, I'd like to just put out there to people, if you do have any questions, you know, if you listen to a guest and there are questions that you might want to ask or whatever, don't hesitate to put those on the Facebook page, and we'll either connect you or get the answers for you. And, you know, as well, folks, share this Facebook page with your friends. Ask them to take a look at it. And if they like what they see, give us a like on it. We do appreciate that very much. So, Boyd, what's coming up on some future shows here?
Well, we're really going to put a focus, if we can, over the next few weeks on getting as many fighters who are scheduled to be on the ECC card in July on the show to find out a little bit about these new up-and-comers, where they're training, what they're doing, how they're feeling. I mean, many of them, Rick, as you know, are going to be first-time fighters or guys who are going for their very first time from amateur to pro. And I'm really interested to see how those guys are feeling and what this experience is like for them. And like I said earlier in the show, if you guys do not have your medicals done, then shame on you, and even worse, shame on your coach. Like, if you're a month out from a fight that should have happened a week from now, then your medical should have been done ages ago. You're not farting around. If you're going to fight, get your paperwork done, get everything done. You want to be a professional fighter, then be professional, just like it was a job.
Skip, you there?
I'm here, brother.
You see, usually you run out on us at the end here. But do you see what I was telling you about Boyd being drunk with power? Do you see how he talks? This is the way he talks to me, man. He'll call me and go on like this, like scold me. That's the way he acts now. Created a monster. What'd you think of tonight's show?
I great show. I definitely think you need to have just a whole show with Kenneth and no one else. There's just too much to go over with him. I know for a fact that I had 15, 20 questions I could have thrown out. I mean, it's really interesting because his training versus the training for U.S. officials is night and day.
Really? How so?
Okay, like here in the state of Oregon, most of our inspectors are state police officers because that's who runs our athletic commission. So a cop on the weekend when he's not working gets hired to be an inspector at an event for $250 for one day. And basically he just watches. He doesn't know. The referees that we have, some of them are truly just buddies. The ring announcer or the timekeeper and the judges are usually ex-cops or current cops or friends of the promoter.
Wow.
I'll be honest. I've been a judge at 5 different events, and
oh my God!
And
I would hire you to judge a best cat contest.
Well, what's sad is, you know, I called a fight. I called a round. A guy got knocked down, so I gave the round to the guy who knocked him down, 10-9. Well, the other two judges gave it to the other guy, and I was like, well, dude, he got knocked down. All his takedowns were stuffed. Yeah, he did have maybe a few more strikes landed, but that knockdown and the stuffed takedowns won the round, you know? How can you give it to the other guy? And, you know, one of the guys was like, look, hey, I'm just getting paid $180 to do this. So I don't really care. Well, that's the problem here. That's a huge problem here in Oregon, especially or on the reservations where there is no sanctioning body. And you literally, I've seen, he mentioned timekeepers. I was recently at an event where the timekeeper was a doctor who was a friend of the owner of the promotion, and they paid him $150 to be the timekeeper. Well, you figure he's a medical doctor. He should be able to use a stopwatch. Well, he was talking to one of the ring girls, let a fight go an extra minute and 8 seconds.
Oh, you're kidding me.
No.
Man, and these are the people you're trusting with the health and welfare of your fighters in there. This is scary shit, man.
Yeah, I mean, we like to criticize the commission here in Nova Scotia. It seems like attacking commissions and officials and judges is as much a part of the sport as watching people fight. But we are extremely lucky to have the commission that we have and for them to approach things the way that they do. I mean, it can be an enormous pain in the ass sometimes, especially with how strict the medicals and stuff are. I think Ontario maybe is as strict as what it is here in Nova Scotia, but I mean, I think that is just a sign of how they approach everything. They you heard Ken talk about it, how they broke down the judging criteria, even far, far, far beyond what we see in the, what are they called, the Unified Rules of Mixed Martial Arts that we'd see in the UFC. And you're right, Skippy, we have to have that guy back on to break down a whole bunch of other stuff into more detail.
Yeah, and I'd like to listen to him. I'd like to hear Skippy jump in as well and do, kind of compare the two as well. That'd be interesting to hear.
Absolutely. And Rick, we're going to have, very soon, we're going to have Mr. Hubert Earle and Mickey McDonald on, and we'll get sort of another side of the coin from them because Hubert Earle is the head official, the chief official. He's the guy that Ken indicated, like, you need to get chosen by somebody in an interview process if you even want to be a timekeeper and start down this road of becoming an official. Well, Mr. Hubert Earle is the guy who has to give you that initial nod, and Mickey McDonald is basically the heart and soul of the Nova Scotia Combat Sports Commission for many, many years. So those guys are going to have some insight and some stories as well.
Yeah, great insight. So what's coming up on future shows? What do we got coming up, Boyd?
Just going to be all fighters from the upcoming ECC, I think.
Yeah.
Again, get your medicals done, guys, because we don't want to give a spot to a guy who isn't taking this seriously, doesn't have his medicals done, has no intentions of fighting, when there's another kid out there busting his ass, has his paperwork all done and is ready to roll. I reached out to Kent Peters at Zombie Proof in Cape Breton. Said, I heard you got some guys fighting. What's the status of their medicals? And he's like, my guys are medicaled ages ago. We're ready to step into the cage now. I'm like, okay,
yeah.
Now that's a guy who's taking care of his fighters.
Yeah, yeah, and I think if you want to fight, you should, your medical should be done before you even throw your name into the hat. But so we're going to bring the fighters on to discuss once we get the matchups. The matchups must be close to being set now.
Yep, I asked Peter and Gavin if I could get it from them today, and they said not today. We still have too many people without their paperwork in.
Okay.
They said ask again next week, and we'll probably be able to start rolling out some matchups then. So
that's
still
great.
The only one that we really have is one that's really worth talking about, and I guess we will have Michael on pretty soon, and that's Michael Spenline and Lennon Whitlock. I would love to get both of those guys on in the next little while because that's a fight that's relevant on the national stage, which is cool to see happen here in Atlantic Canada. And, I want to get some of these newer fighters and up-and-comers on the show as well.
Yeah, it would be nice to talk to some of the folks that are walking in and doing their amateur fights as well. I think that would be great.
You know who else we've got to get on the show? Danny Patterson.
Yes,
I mean, Mike Malott keeps talking about him. We need to get Danny on the show and find out
I mean, Mike's pretty vague. He says he talks to Danny. Well, I mean, what are they talking about? What is he doing? I mean, it's one thing to sit there and blow smoke up a fighter's ass, but it seems like Danny's doing a hell of a lot more than that. I mean, he's doing something that's really changing the way Mike looks at his training and the way he looks at fighting and the way he prepares. So be interested to see what that's all about.
I mean, this is a developing part of the sport in this area anyway, is how are these fighters mentally preparing for these fights? And, you know, what's involved in that? I mean, I know every fighter is different, how they prepare mentally. You know, how do these professionals analyze what these fighters require and how do they go about it? It'd be quite interesting, I think.
Yeah, and if anybody is still listening here almost 2 hours into the show tonight, if there's anybody you would like for us to have on the show, if there's any topic that you would like for us to cover on the show, man, put it out there, because we're coming up with ideas all the time, and we have guys who have expressed an interest in being on the show, but we want to know what the folks out there listening want to hear and who you want to hear from. So don't be shy. Get on social media, send us an email, send us a Facebook post or a tweet, and let us know who you want to hear from or what you want us to ask or what you want us to do.
So, Boyd, last time we signed off, you had a great liner that you ended with, and I loved it. I want to come up with one for myself as well, and this is a song that I have followed for a lot of years, and I think it's really cool, and I've often looked back on it. It's called Wear Sunscreen, okay?
I love that song.
Do you know what song I'm talking about?
Baz Luhrmann. I love that song.
I remember when the song first came out, and I've never forgotten it, and I continuously go back and listen to that song. So look that up on YouTube. Wear Sunscreen, and ironically, I think the guy's name that did it is called Boss Rutan, I think.
No,
but
Boz Luhrmann.
Oh, is that what it is? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, see,
yeah.
You always know the stuff.
There's a great line in that song for you, Rick, and it's take care of your knees because you'll miss them when they're gone.
But it's a great song, and so when you do your sign-off, I'm going to nail it with mine, and then we ride off into the sunset, brother.
Well, that's enough BS for one night.
And remember, always wear your sunscreen. Skip this when you hit the music, man.
Welcome to the BS Show. Are you ready to shoot the... The BS Show would like to thank their sponsors. Jack Cameron, accredited mortgage professional. Jack can show you the way home. Graco Impact Sports, providing top-quality combat sport equipment tested and used by all levels of athletes. Dominate your world. Reposales.ca. Specializing in vehicle and equipment recovery, liquidation, and sales. Hemmings House Pictures, the global movement media makers, helping tell your brand story to the world and accelerate the momentum of your movement. Farmbox Films, capturing stories the way you want to remember them.